From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. 64 pounds of fentanyl off the streets, thanks to one golden retriever. Labradoodle, what kind of dog is this?
That's a golden. That's a golden. You nailed it.
That's a beautiful dog there. And obviously a very drug-happy dog. So the U.S. Coast Guard also returns to Port Angeles with over $50 million in cocaine. Someone is having a rough deal. Those cartels out there are having a bad time right
Seriously,
now.
Right before Mother's Day,
right before Mother's Day. Ay Dios mio is what they say. Oh, there's this comment section in this story at Como. It's pretty innocuous, but it says Seattle police arrest five juveniles after car theft spree ends in high-speed chase. Comment section was a little racist, I think is the best way to talk about it. But
hard to paint it with any other brush.
We'll get into all of that. So this major drug bust, this is an amazing, amazing amount of drugs that were taken off the street. So shoreline officers and King County deputies were able to get 64.3 pounds of fentanyl and 253,704 M30 fentanyl pills off the streets. Now, the M30s are oxymorphone. They're pressed to look like morphine pills.
That's the scariest thing.
But they are not morphine pills.
No,
they are fentanyl pills. And so not only that, officers also recovered 3.1 pounds of heroin, 1.7 pounds of cocaine, 1.7 pounds of fentanyl-laced cocaine, and 2.4 pounds of meth. Also, $32,836 in cash, two guns, and one car, or as I like to call it, a Tuesday. A Tuesday. See, get it? Because I used to, Nick.
I can't believe you're alive.
I used to do a lot of drugs, Nick, right?
Two for Tuesday.
A Tuesday. And this was my thought about it. I'm reading this story. I'm happy the little dog found all these drugs. Mm-hmm. I think that that's great. It was obviously officers.
Yeah.
But the thing that just made me think about this is everybody talks about, we got to get these drugs off the streets. When has that ever worked? Meaning preventing drug addiction, preventing people from finding drugs that they want to use. It hasn't worked. It's never worked. And I'll tell people why. If we go back and you look at primary sources from 2008, 2009, 2010, you start to see this kind of essence of OxyContin is becoming a real problem. You're seeing opiates becoming a real problem. And then you have the Federal Prescription Drug Act that comes through in 2012. And then all of a sudden it becomes much harder to get prescription opiates. And then what do you see about 2013, 2014, 2015? Heroin.
Heroin's
it's back in
yeah.
a big way, baby. Yeah. Coke is dead as disco. You know what I'm saying? Heroin, my friends. Eric Stoltz, Pulp Fiction, great movie. But now you see people, all of a sudden the heroin reserves dried up. And what do people go to? Fentanyl.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I do. It's a bump in the rug. It pops up somewhere else in a different way. Absolutely.
So the problem is that people, when they do this thing where they say, well, we need to get these drugs off of our streets, you're solving one aspect of the problem, but not really the larger aspect of the problem, which is that you have a bunch of mentally ill people out on the streets who will either do heroin or meth or whatever they can get their hands on. And so you can do all the big grabs you want and you can say, well, at least we saved one life. But at the end of the day, what you're really getting are drug addicts who are going to go to different sources for those drugs. And any attempt to paint it with kind of optimism or rose-colored glasses is going to end up just being kind of a short-sighted feel-good, hey, everybody, we got drugs off the streets. In actuality, you're not solving the problem.
Can I tell you why this? Why I got the glasses on today? Why I'm happy about this bus today? You're right about everything you say, that the drugs are going to just change how they get high. Other stuff's going to take its place when stuff gets off the street. You're right about all that.
Mm-hmm.
This is my neighborhood. This is my local police department.
As long as it doesn't happen in my backyard, I'm fine. As long as those people are dying down in Seattle, I don't really care, right?
That's not what I'm saying. I care about those people, too. But I got a kid in this neighborhood, a college-age kid in this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're talking about those pills that are pressed to look like other things other than the fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
The privileged kids that my kid hangs around with. We live in a nice, safe neighborhood for the most part, right? Here's kids that are stealing prescriptions from their parents.
Sure.
Or where'd you get that? Or you know, they're dealing in circles where they really are oblivious to the potential danger.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see cops taking this amount of dope off my streets, of my neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
I got to think that maybe my kid or some kid that I've met over the years may have been spared a horrific and tragic accident because of this. I'm with you that the problem still exists.
I mean, that's kind of wishful thinking, though, Spike, because if I can't get drugs here, then I'll get drugs there. And I'll tell you, as a former drug addict, thank you so much there, Nick. Appreciate that, my friend. As a former drug addict, if I couldn't get drugs in Salinas, California, then I was going to go to Capitola, California. If I couldn't get drugs in Capitola, I'd work my way down to San Luis Obispo. If I couldn't get drugs in San Luis Obispo, I'd be going heading up north to San Francisco, California.
I'm with you. Addicts are going to be addicts, but I'm talking about kids that are experimenting that could come across a tragically misidentified.
You know what I think you're trying to do, my guy, is I think that you're attempting to paint a hypothetical because it makes you feel better about the fact that there are people who are dying in the streets.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I'll own that.
Right, yeah, but that's not really realistic in terms of the actual outcomes when it comes to drug addicts on the streets. Like this example right here, this other story about the Coast Guard returning to Port Angeles with over $50 million in cocaine. That's nice. That's good. Cocaine addicts are going to get their drugs regardless. Do you know what I mean?
And so
all of these stories that come out, they can do two things for people. They can make them mad and they can say, looks like Dow Constantine or Jay Inslee or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or then they can say these cartels or whatever it is. Outside of that, these stories don't really serve a purpose. What you could do is you could take these stories and is you could say the United States has a severely distorted relationship with drugs. And this is something that we need to solve. And then you could say, okay, well, let's look at the adverse childhood experience score that's given to drug addicts when they're in rehab. It's called the ACE test. 1 to 10, how traumatic was your childhood?
Okay.
And then you will see that what are things that lead to people becoming drug addicts? Food restriction, poverty, physical abuse, psychological abuse, sexual abuse. And then you would say, in what ways can we change these things to ensure that people don't grow up to be drug addicts? So you might say, well, we need a national food program. You might say that we need a national law against striking your child. You might say that we need a national law against withholding food from your child, right?
Yeah. I mean,
these are all things that would actually produce change within our culture as a society, not, gee, I'm glad that they got $50 million worth of cocaine out of the ocean, right? I mean, like, it's just there are solutions out there that don't involve getting mad at anybody. There are solutions that I have because I'm a genius, but there's solutions where you don't need to be mad or blame anybody that everybody could get on board with. Who would vote against a law which says that it is illegal to withhold food from your child?
Nobody could vote against that.
Any Republican, any Democrat, nobody could do it, right? In good conscience. Who could vote against a law that says if you strike your child to the point where you are leaving marks or bruises, that's jail time? Who could vote against that?
Right. It's already on the books, right?
No. In many states, it's perfectly legal to hit your child.
I was unaware of that.
There's actually Rush used to run a promo. Rush Limbaugh used to run a promo. It was like the Parents University for Corporal Punishment or something like that, where he would basically play a clip of a child talking back to their parent, and then it's the clip of the dad spanking said child.
Was it a parody spot?
It was really Rush embracing his sociopathy, which is really sad because he was making a joke out of beating kids. But that's besides the point. Speaking of children, by the way, Seattle police have arrested 5 juveniles after a car theft. Ends in a high-speed chase. You got a couple of 15-year-olds, 2 12-year-olds, and a 13-year-old. It's a very similar story to what we saw 2 weeks ago with that other band of 5 that was going around.
Yeah, yeah. That carjacked. This one's I'm not sure how this car was stolen. I don't know.
And so, again, there's a way to talk about this that's solution-oriented. But I thought to myself, well, Como News, obviously they have people who are listeners and who view their content that are civil and responsible and are not cruel and discompassionate people, right? Obviously this is the case. Obviously I'm not wrong about this, right? I mean, I can go down and I can read the comment section and I'm not going to see any racism. I'm not going to see any short-sighted ideas as to how to deal with these deeply troubled children. I'm not going to see, you know what I mean? I'm going to see people engaging in thoughtful debate. Because this is what we as people who live in this region do, right?
If you care enough to write a comment, yeah, you're invested.
Right. So I've got, this is a good tag right here. This is Seattle Native 1949. I wonder what this boomer will have to say about this. Said, times have changed. It's time to change the laws. Adult crime equals adult time, is what he says. Now, that's stupid for a number of reasons, but more specifically, it's stupid because if you were to charge these kids with the adult crime, meaning adult time, you have grand theft auto, you have fleeing from the police, mm-hmm. you have larceny charges. You're going to give a 15-year-old kid 25 years in a facility. So then you will have a 40-year-old man who is a hardened criminal, who is bitter and resentful at the world, who's going to be released with no skills, no social skills, and who has not felt love or compassion for 25 years. That's a good way to fix society, right? Let's make more sociopaths.
You're so optimistic that a 15 or a 13 or a 12-year-old would survive.
Even survive.
Yeah.
It goes on to say, stop protecting them because they are juveniles. Adult crime equals mugshots. Time to let citizens know who these criminals are. That, again, S.J. Goose, is illegal. Because, whoops, that's the wrong one. Illegal.
Well, gotta fit, too.
Because your juvenile crime records are sealed, right?
Correct.
There's been a distinction in the law there. And to try to release that information would be just devastating to those children. Goes on to say, this is so crazy. When people are talking about this, it's all I see is, oh, here's another one. This is what someone wrote about these kids. They're talking about their parents, right? This person says, I bet they will find a lot of stolen goods if they search the parents' homes. And then the comment that somebody made underneath that is spawn and yawn types, meaning that these are detached parents. Now,
heartless.
Right. Think about that for 2 seconds. This could be your neighbor. This could be the guy who delivers your mail. This could be the person who helps you mow your lawn every Saturday, whatever it might be. And they hold these antiquated, draconian, cruel, anti-science thoughts about developing minds and developing brains, and they think that the best way to solve juvenile crime and juvenile delinquency is to punish these kids in such a way to ruin their lives permanently. A 12-year-old child, think about that for like 2 seconds. You don't think there's a problem in the United States with the way that we talk about crime? I have all the evidence I need right here in this comment section, right? Their parents probably taught them this lifestyle. This is what Fast 340 says. Or should I say, comma, parent, get it, right?
I get it. Oh, that's good.
Right.
Clever.
So what I see is that there is this bizarre amount of racism in this region that I don't think that people fully understand that they possess. And I'm not saying that, you know, everybody around here is a racist. But what I'm saying, when I read this comment section, what I see, people, you would not speak this way about other children who committed similar acts. They simply wouldn't. It's because they're black kids.
Right. Or came from different neighborhoods, or whether ethnic or economic.
Right. And if people are getting tight about this and they're going, oh, Jack, how do you know that? Because it's in the language that they're using, right? If you read a bunch of stats about single parenthood within the black community and you get very upset about the black community and then you start blaming the black community for juvenile delinquency and then you end up referring to an entire community as spawn and yawn types, you are a racist. Like, this is the kind of thing that I think that we should really shy away from and actually shame publicly. But Como News is more than happy to showcase it for all to see under a story about juvenile crime. Not a single person in this entire comment section has released any or has produced any kind of meaningful solution in terms of therapy, in terms of walking these, rehabilitating these kids.
No talk of investing in programs that would maybe deter this from?
Not a single one. Not after school programs, more funding,
not more therapists in schools,
none of it. And that's how I know that this is about race and ethnicity. Because if it was white kids, you would say, we need more therapists that this one's. Do you see what I'm saying?
That's what happens when you cancel Little League.
This is what happens when you get rid of after school programs.
Sure is.
And I'm not trying to attack anybody, but what I am trying to do is attack this kind of ideology, right? Here's another one. That oppression must be really bad to force these innocent chillin to commit such an act. They are taking black nomenclature and mocking it. Do you see what I'm saying? People say this thing where they go like, oh, man, I'm not a racist. I would never, you know, I think that everybody deserves to be treated equally. And then you take black nomenclature and you use it in a way that's disparaging and demeaning. It's like, what is this the kind of world that people want to live in? I don't. I personally don't want to live in this kind. I want to live in a world where we're solution oriented and we're trying to think about how to solve these problems of juvenile mental illness as opposed to mocking the black community. Which is, I guess, is a way of off-gassing. It's a way of dealing with your emotions about it. I thought we all grew out of that after sixth grade, right?
I think it's more an indicator of the world people are from, not the world people are in.
What do you mean?
I mean, these are people who were raised in a very acceptable racist societies. I was raised the same way in a city where you don't go to certain parts of town. You know, and that's their fault. They can't take care of their part of the city.
Oh, I see.
That's how I was raised.
I
and I bet most of these commentators, like Mr. 49, I'm guessing from a chronological point of view, that's the world this guy came from, or lady.
Yeah, man.
And you can't let go of the past. It's too hard to change.
Well,
when you're that old.
There's part of that, but what happens with people is there's this really interesting phenomenon where when people latch on to a solution, it tends to like neuro from the perspective of brain development. When we find a solution that fits within our worldview, we lock onto it.
Right.
And
we're
we
done.
Keep
yeah.
it and we save it. Yeah. Right. And the problem is now is that people are unwilling to challenge their presuppositions about the way that a society could look. And so they default to their previous presuppositions right. about things like jailing children, not realizing that if you look at the stratified data on what happens to these kids, you will see that the outcomes are bad for about 70% of the people who go through the juvenile detention
system.
If you care enough to look.
Right, right.
But then when I talk about it and I try to showcase to people, this is the kind of thought process that leads to more crime, more destruction, more suffering. What does that make me? You're a lib,
soft.
You're a snowflake, soft on crime,
yeah.
whatever it might be. I'm the only person, to my knowledge, that has actually looked at this story and said, these kids need a juvenile camp where they can get therapy, psychotherapy, where they can get rehabilitative services, potentially bring them up to a certain level of education so that when they leave, they can have their high school diploma and they can potentially go on to college. That is the way that we should be talking about this problem, not winking and nodding at our racist friends because it makes us feel good, right?
Well, you know, this is the way we've done things for decades, and this is the results we received. And they want to keep doing things that same way. And that's the definition of insanity, to do the same thing and expect a
yeah,
different result?
Exactly. Well, I mean, the definition of insanity is actually there is too much either serotonin or dopamine in the brain.
I'm talking about the grandma pillow definition.
Grandma pillow or the Hallmark version.
Yeah.
Laura,
the
I'm assuming point. That people in the text line totally agree with me on this, right? That's my assumption, right? Or do we have any good ones?
Oh, I honestly haven't been scrolling through them.
Again? Why for? Is it really that because you didn't want to see the racist in the text line?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Isn't that sad that like we can't even talk about it with using the text line without people being like, bah! Right? They're just outraged about it.
There are also some mean things about Como, but I definitely won't be reading those.
Well, we love our friends at Como.
We do.
We love our friends.
It's the comment section we're having a problem with.
It's the comment section. It's not Como News has got a special place in my heart. I refuse to malign any of the fine people that work there that I know their names.
They're doing great work.
Those people who work there, right? I'm just saying,
all them.
There's
all
no Lauren Donovans over at Como, is all I'm saying, right?
That's why it's safe to say.
And I'm a Lauren Donovan kind of girl, is all I'm saying, right? If when I want to get my news, I want to get it from Lauren Donovan. Take a really quick break. When we get back, the newest season of a television show features a local participant. Spike O'Neill's kid wants to be on this television show, and it is weird. It's bizarre. And I think it speaks to a much deeper problem in society. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.
The internet can be a dark and often dangerous place. Only one man has the courage to go where no sensible person would go. Jack Stein is terminally online.
Terminally online. I waste my life on the internet. It's funny. Someone in the text line said I was, what did they say about, it was like highbrow academics?
Oh,
or something?
A lot of words out about academia and the week. I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard I dismissed it too quickly.
Isn't that weird, man, that like. We used to have an appreciation for people who researched and who looked into stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I find now is that there's such a hatred of academia and intellectualism in the United States. I don't have an ego massive enough to call myself either an intellectual or an academic, right? I mean,
right.
I just don't. But even the hint that somebody is talking about research or data or studies is so offensive to some people that they say, why am I listening to this highbrow academia?
That's
give me some good old-fashioned country racism. That's what I want. Give me some good old-fashioned country down home talk, right?
I mean, a crock of possum stew.
Right.
Just fills the belly and warms the heart.
I just, you know, Spike, like, you are a very sharp person, right? Just in perception. Spike just gave me a look like of deep surprise. Like
I appreciate that because I look at you and think, man, how do you... You learned quite a lot over the years. You retained a lot of intellect. You retained a lot of education and experience and the ability to problem solve.
Right.
And you still look at things through a good person with a good heart. You still look at a person and see a person.
Yeah, I try.
I do. Try. So when you say that I'm sharp, I appreciate
that. Well, the reason I say that is because if you brought me a study or something to read, I would not say, whoa, Mr. Academia over here. Look at this guy.
Coastal elite.
Okay, so I used to do this radio show with Dr. Z, MD, PhD, Silver Fox, and Robot Brain. And Dr. Z is one of the world's foremost experts on rare diseases and metabolic diseases. And he is a stone cold genius. And people would do the same thing to him because people would call into the show and they would want to ask questions about whatever they were going through.
Sure, you had an expert on it.
And people would call in and they would be like, this highbrow academic over here, what does he know? I don't know. He operates on children's brains so that they don't have seizures anymore.
With your fancy book learning.
With your fancy book learning. Like, this is a really bizarre state that we live in currently where if you start citing stats and figures and research, it's thought of as being it works against you. Because you've bought into the leftist idea of medicine and science, the woke, you know what I mean? Like, it is a really interesting thing. Now, saying all that, there's a show that has become very, very popular. No heady academia, no intellectualism. It is a show where everything you need to know about it is in the title.
Show for the people.
It's a show for the people.
Okay.
Naked and afraid. We take a human being and we put them into the wilderness with a camera crew. And we film them as they are both naked and afraid. It sells itself, right?
It really does.
It's like hotcakes, right? I mean, it just comes right off the shelves, naked and afraid. Local participant was on the show. I don't really care about her. I care about the fact that your kid is auditioning for this show.
She is, yes, my older.
So Ryan wants to go on. Now, I've seen Ryan. Ryan's very beautiful, first and foremost.
Well, thank you.
Ryan also weighs approximately 110 pounds.
Sand in her pockets.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so when we were having a Christmas brunch together, when she was lifting the fork, it was kind of like watching the world's strongest men try to deadlift those gigantic stones. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Ryan is a very funny, very fast. She does really great voices. It's not a lot of body fat to lose being naked and afraid.
That's what I'm worried about, too. And I kind of blame myself for this.
Eating all of her food?
No. Have you ever been, well, first off, she's a narcissist like myself.
Like me.
Right. She's an attention grabber.
Yeah.
And I kind of blame myself for that. But even more so, have you ever been naked in public?
Yeah, all the time.
Other than accidentally.
Every night at 2 o'clock in the morning, I run up and down East Lake Avenue naked screaming.
That's you.
That's me. I'm the maniac. It's been me the whole time.
You know, we had the experience when I was part of very young, early in my radio career, of doing a nude event every year with naked listeners called Nude Stock. We did it about a half dozen times over the years.
Okay.
And you would literally be 1,000, 2,000 people at a nudist colony just kind of getting over being naked in front of people. And it is it's very liberating. It's not for me. It's something I chose to continue doing after the promotions.
Right.
But I took Ryan there when she was about 5.
Mm.
And I could show you an aerial shot from a helicopter.
I've seen that photo. Bob sent it to me.
Yeah, where my 5-year-old is naked on a towel, if you microscope in on this picture. Thank goodness there wasn't a detail there is today. But I think maybe I broke her you shouldn't be naked in public thing at an early age.
Yeah.
And now she's got her desire for attention coupled with her comfort of being naked. They have merged to seek a spot on this very Naked and Afraid show. In fact, she's taken to more than one survival course. She's taking those surviving, which is great.
It's too much.
Survive in the wilderness course where you got to live off the land for 24, 48 hours.
She's going to be naked.
Well, that's. I guess we're working up to that.
I don't have an issue being naked. What I have an issue with being naked is I don't like to be observed as I'm being naked because I have a David-esque physique. It's very chiseled
marble.
And very,
yeah.
Like you can see my obliques, you can see the striations in various parts of my body. So I basically look like a Grecian statue. And when I go places naked, all people do is they just kind of stop, right? And they go, "Oh, this facade, this paragon of physical fitness and human perfection."
So it's the attention. It's uncomfortable for you.
It's very uncomfortable. Laura, nudity, are you for it or against it?
What a question. I actually know someone who was on the show. She led a camping trip that I went on and talked about her experience. She goes on survivalist shows like as a career.
Yeah.
And she said that being naked was the first thing that just went out the window. Like she said, you don't even think of, she had an Australian accent, which I absolutely can't do.
Yeah, a couple hours into it, you forget.
She said you forget almost immediately because they really do drop you in the jungle. And she's like, you just are so focused on surviving. And I did watch her episode, and she was extremely capable. The only thing, you get to bring one thing. She brought a machete.
That's very smart. Nick, are you a never nude? Are you a not naked kind of guy?
That's us.
Hey, there you go.
You had me a naked man.
That one, yeah.
I just, when I think about this kind of competition, I understand that people do it to try to test themselves. It's just not up my alley. I would just never do it.
Any kind of survivalist show, naked aside, would you ever go on like Survivor kind of show?
I like my air fryer. I like my yoga mat. I enjoy my high pressure shower. Do you know what I mean? These are things that are important to me. And to give them up to be on, to have people pay attention to me is not a thing that I am willing to do. I'm sorry.
I can't believe that people can make a career out of reality TV like your friend has, Laura. That's a career. Survivalist, TV survivalist?
Producer's choice, balloons harm wildlife. Florida is set to ban their release. And normally I do news out of Florida because I think it's fascist. This is amazing, Laura. You're convincing me to want to move to the, what do they call it? The meth state? What do they call Florida?
America's appendix.
God's waiting room is what they call it.
That's what they call it.
God's waiting room. Good old Florida. So we're going to be talking about why they came to this decision when we get back right after this. Producer's choice. Always a fun segment we like to do.
Producer's choice.
Oh, I guess Deep Voice Guy comes in. Hey! So, Florida, God's waiting room, as I like to call it. It's a place that I will likely never live. I liked the idea of free market capitalism, and apparently you can't do that in Florida. I like freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. I like freedom of association. Apparently you can't do that in Florida anymore. For somebody who certainly does love freedom, Ron DeSantis also hates it at the same time. I have no idea how he's able to convince everybody that he's some kind of bastion or beacon of freedom, you know, with the whole banning of books and whatnot and the whole, if you're gay, you're not allowed to talk about it. There's a lot of weird stuff going on in Florida.
His freedom status says it's complicated.
It's freedom for some, and that's what really gets me about it, is that, like, the concept, or at least the philosophic underpinnings of conservatism is this concept that leave me alone, basically.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Governments, bureaucracies, leave me alone. And somehow it's been distorted over the last 20 years to be, leave me alone, but I'm going to be all up in your business. I want to know everything about your business. I want your kids' medical records. I want your personal, if you're a woman, I want your personal medical record. I want to know everything that you're doing in your own personal life because I'm a nasty fascist, right? Like, that's what has happened to this movement. It's become freedom for me, but not for thee. And it's really interesting to see how these tenets have been distorted and perverted over so many years, right? You want to dress up like a lady and you want to dance in a bar during brunch. Can't do that. Nope. No more drag queen story hour. No, can't do that because we got to defend the kids, even though these parents are taking their children there voluntarily. And it's completely the freedom of association. It's a lot of weird paradoxes within the kind of philosophic underpinnings of conservatism, which I would be happy to debate with anybody if anybody wanted to come on, because I am having a hard time understanding how anybody could call themselves a conservative and say, I don't like big government in my life. I despise it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Me, personally. But for you, I want big government all over you.
Oh, yeah.
All
you know
over
how lewd and immoral I am.
Right.
Of course.
Do you want to grow lab-grown meat? No, not in this state, buddy. What are you, some kind of woke lib? We're not free market capitalists here. We're not going to undercut the cattle industry. Like, the problem with the kind of conservative ethos right now is that it is the hypocrisy within it is so transparent that how could anybody possibly not see it, right? How could you be on the side of freedom and independence and the right to not have government intrude into your personal life and then also run to the state because you don't want gay people to get married, or run to the state because you want access to that woman's private medical records,
or won't make that guy a cake, or whatever.
Won't make that guy a cake, or
it's
whatever
gotta,
it is.
It's got to be a purposeful, willful ignorance, or willful dismissal of other people's rights. You can't be that much of a blind spot.
Yeah, no, I think that what's happened is that, like, conservative commentators have gone to conservatives and they've said, we don't have problems. The Democrats have problems.
Our ideology,
and I see it all the time in our YouTube channel, in our comment section. The Jack and Spike Show, by the way, which you can subscribe to at any point in time. People say, conservatives think like this. It's stats, facts, figures. We're these brainy academics that I keep hearing about, right? We're those kinds of people. Democrats, the party lies. This is what I hear all the time. At the same time, though, what I see, or at least the policies that are put out there, are things like basically everything that is antithetical to freedom. So balloons, this article from the New York Times, released in the sky don't always go to heaven. That's from Cara Buckley.
They broke my heart.
Words of poetry, right? They often end up in oceans and waterways where they're 32 times more likely to kill seabirds than any other types of plastic debris. Now, I happen to agree with this law in Florida, but if I was a Floridian and I am a conservative, you are telling me that the state is coming in and they're telling me that what I can do with my balloons?
Yes, they are.
That's big government, boy. That is laden with hypocrisy. So either I get to release my balloons of freedom or I don't. Either government is telling me what I can and cannot do with my corporeal being or they are not. And this to me is just bizarre, right?
Yeah. And this had bipartisan support across Republicans and Democrats of Florida. This is the one thing they can agree on.
Get government out of my life is what I like to say, especially when it comes... Get government out of my balloons.
When it's filled with hot air.
When it's filled with hot air. Friend of the show, Jesse Jones, coming on in the next segment. Cairo 7 reporter. He did a piece on rent collusion locally. Everybody's talking about the rent's too high.
Yep.
It's too darn high around here. Mr. Jones is going to be stepping in. Mr. Jones and me. Tell each other fairy tales, right?
Oh, not this, Mr.
That's,
Jones.
That's me and this Mr. Jones.
I know that.
I wrote that song.
Did you?
I wrote that. Yeah,
you're so modest.
It just came off the top of my head just now. No one else has ever written that, and it certainly wasn't a number one hit back in 1996, but that's besides the point. Jesse Jones, when we get back right after this.